Hey, this is Kurt Angle, the greatest wrestler of all time and Olympic gold medalist. And you're listening to the amazing, awesome, incredible Wrestle In podcast. Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the December episode of the Purovision podcast. Once again, this year, we're using our December episode to talk about our matches of the year. So it's a little bit of a change from our usual flow, but we've got my two co-hosts here as always. First, our Jake Lee Trufer. Ben, how are you in this fine December?
I am rather cold.
It is very cold in the UK this year.
It is very cold, and in my undying allegiance to Martin Lewis, I absolutely refuse to turn on the heating, so I shall simply freeze under a mountain of blankets instead.
That is the way. 10 blankets before the central heating goes on.
Exactly, exactly. I refuse to turn on this one little radiator. It's not happening.
It's a decision I respect. I'm sure Martin Lewis will be listening and he'll be delighted to hear.
I'm sure Martin Lewis is an avid fan of Japanese professional wrestling and he will be standing up in his living room applauding me right now.
Mm. Martin Lewis definitely likes Randy Orton. That's the team's wrestling, I reckon. Very off brand to start off with, but we'll get swiftly back onto topic before we go on to a Martin Lewis interlude. But Kay is with us as well, our Dragon Gate super fan. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. So yeah, sort of decompressing after my Japan trip, but other than that, I'm doing okay. It's cold here too, but in betrayal of Martin Lewis, I have in fact turned on my heating.
Wow.
Well, that is wow. Sacrilege. I can't believe that. To the king of British central heating.
we you hear it here first. Kay's Quest does not like money saving.
She's defied the money saving expert of the UK.
The fight for money saving expert of the UK. That is not on. How dare you?
Well, I live in a dorm, so the heating is already like included in the cost. So.
Oh, that's fine then. You have that heating on for as long as you possibly can.
If bills are included, right, turn it up to full blast. Martin Lewis would approve.
Exactly. Bills are included, you get your money's worth.
Okay, I've introduced you as a super fan, and I feel like you've really earned that badge with your. You've recently gone to Japan. You've just come back, and before we head down our path of our top five matches each from the year, I want to talk about your trip to Japan. So, how was that?
It was very interesting, and because I think like a lot of wrestling fans or pro wrestling fans have made the experience of going to Japan to see a show. But what I did was I initially went to Japan to join the Dragon Gate fan tour, where so it meant basically that the first time I saw any of the Dragon Gate wrestlers in person, not on my screen, was when they sat down next to me at a dinner party.
Who were you sat next to? That's the important question there.
They did it after sort of a speed dating model. They had groups of wrestlers. They divided them up by faction, and like a big faction's like Natural Vibes had two groups. And basically like every so and so minutes, a new faction would go to a new table. So like the wrestlers in the faction could decide who would sit next to whom on that table, but every faction was on each table at one point. And usually the people who sat down next to me were the people who could speak a little bit of English. because I was the only overseas fan on the tour, and I'm guessing like they tried to prepare for that. But like most wrestlers in Dragon Gate do not speak a lot of English. that was something I figured out. I sat next to, oh God, I do remember talking to Yuti and Big Boss Shimizu. Riffy talked to me. Mante did. He does actually talk a bit of English, thankfully, because I was really worried because I do not speak Spanish at all. And also on the and on the Zebrahead side of things, obviously I was that in between Kai and Shun. And Shun instantly recognized me from the interview thing. I later learned that.
Fantastic.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I later learned that that Roland had told him that I'd be coming to the fan tour. Because he wanted to send a thank you for the interview, and he was like, no, you can say it yourself. Short hair, you recognize. Yeah, that was really interesting, and obviously like there were other activities, and I think it really like changes your perception of the wrestlers, because like in addition to the dinner party, there's like a 3-hour sort of dinner thing where you spend like again 3 hours in a karaoke box with one of those factions, and it's kind of hard to sort of think of wrestlers the way you have did before after one of them like accidentally drank your orange juice. That was also Shun, by the way. Like he was halfway through the glass and he was like, wait, I didn't have orange juice.
If it's Shun, I'm not buying that that's an accident.
I
think he would just quite happily drink anyone's orange juice. I mean, you've seen how much of a menace he is. Do you really think he draws the line having someone else's orange juice?
But when he noticed he apologized and gave it back to me.
That's quite the accusation from you, Ben, on such a podcast.
I'm just saying, he strikes me as a bit of an orange juice thief.
Yeah, and of course you also see the shows and have a lot of opportunity to interact with other fans, and that was really great. Like the shows were like smaller shows, there were like only I think 3 rows on most sides except the hardcore side, and it was a really like nice opportunity to see the wrestling as well from up close. It was really good, but it also, as I said, permanently like changed my the way I view those wrestlers and the way I can talk about them. It was really interesting, and also the other fans, none of them spoke any English at all. there was one really nice family that basically like transferred the normal Japanese of announcement and such into simple Japanese that I could understand. But yeah, that was as far as it got, basically. it was really interesting, and obviously I was present at the December 5th Korakuen Hall show. I think you can even see me on camera if you watch the opening of that show. I'm in the like on the right next to the east entrance.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was all like a really great experience, and I'll be thinking about it for weeks, if not months, probably.
It sounds like you had a really fantastic time. That's great. The only other sort of note before we go into our top five is something worth a passing mention at the very least. We don't really know too much at the time of recording, but New Japan announced that they are a part of the new United Japan Pro Wrestling Industry Group. It's 9 wrestling companies in Japan, pretty much all the big hitters. It's New Japan, Noah, All Japan, DDT, Big Japan, Gambare, Dragon Gate, Stardom, and have I said Gambare? And Tokyo Dome.
Gambare.
Gambare. I love how you knew exactly where the problem was going to be.
Yeah. Well, I'd be more just if the problem was me saying Big Japan wrong, something. But yeah, we don't know too much apart from the fact that they're having a United show in May. There's no real reasons they've come out with of why they've sort of decided to band together. Maybe some sort of like a protectionist idea of like banding together in case of any incidents like COVID happening again, that there's also like a safety net. But interesting that they're all under one big umbrella, and I noticed a few people, Trent from the Ocean Cycling Show, he was on about Stardom and Tokyo Joshi being under the same umbrella as Hella's Frozen Over, that they're on the same umbrella. I think it's quite interesting, though, this.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something to watch out for. Like, definitely, like, of course, as if you look at the list of, you know, the people who are going to be heading it up, it's going to be New Japan again. They're probably going to be big shutting it a little bit, but I mean, like, I already expected that when I saw they were in the group, but I am really looking forward to those shows, and I think having an organization like that, like, obviously, like, it's going to mean a lot of things from a business perspective, but from a fan perspective, I think it's going to maybe mean a lot of fans getting into new Japanese promotions that they maybe wouldn't have watched before, but, like, they see the wrestlers on those joint shows and they might want to check them out. So I think that's going to be something to look forward to. I'm definitely hoping that there'll be new fans that I can talk to about Dragon Gate, of course, and maybe DDT.
Yeah, you just kind of hope with something like this. But at the end of the day, as long as the fan, I mean, you want the promotions and the wrestlers to be protected as well, but it's like, you just really hope that it's not going to be something that the fans will end up losing out on because of, but instead actually benefit from, like you say, finding, you know, getting into new promotions, perhaps, you know, because I do hope that for something like promotions like All Japan or Big Japan, this could be good for them, hopefully maybe elevate them up a little. But I do worry a lot about New Japan big shot in it, as you say, and, you know, if there are any promotions outside of this organization, how's that going to develop and look for them? That's another concern I have. I hope, you know, that if promotions don't decide to join in, they'll be okay, or maybe they do join in if it turns out to be really beneficial. I think that's part of the biggest thing at the moment, because it's, you know, we've only just got this announcement. We don't know how this is going to fully impact the wrestling landscape, because, you know, you might not see the full effects of it until like a year or so down the line. So it's definitely something that will be interesting to see how it develops, because it could be really good. It could also cause some problems. So yeah, I'm tentatively intrigued.
Yeah, and we might know more by the time you listen to the podcast. Maybe it'll come after, but we'll sure, we will update as we go along into the new year. And an interesting one to keep an eye on at the very least. And maybe, you never know, I might start watching some Gambare or whatever I called it earlier.
God damn it.
Maybe I'll learn what it's called through this, and that'll make it worthwhile.
It's the first step, I think.
It's Gambare.
It's the start, isn't it? Maybe that's the first hurdle I need to overcome. So, yeah. But without further ado, Will, jump into our top five lists. So if you remember from last year, we went around the three of us, we did all who we picked for five, our fifth match of the year, then our fours, threes, and so on. And we'll end by the three of us announcing our match of the year from Puro. We started last year with Kay, so it feels only right that we start this year with Ben. So Ben, what's your fifth best match of the year?
Well, I don't know about best, but I've gone more in terms of my favourites or what's kind of memorable and stuck out to me that I remember just really enjoying. And so I've gone for my number five, Yuma Aoyagi versus Yuji Nagata from the Dynamite series in July.
The summer, when it was warm.
Summer, when it was warm, yes. And when Yuma won the belt, that match, just the atmosphere was utterly incredible. And you know, the performance that Yuji Nagata in particular put on was just fantastic. He absolutely smashed it in that match. And, you know, when you have old head title reigns, they can sometimes just be so boring. But like in this instance, I was just like, you know, I was almost holding on to Yuji with this belt while also so desperately wanting Yuma to win it. So there was a fun balance where both participants kind of got you on their side, and the crowd involvement in it was just incredible. I remember those chants for Yuji were just, you know, ingrained in my soul at this point. It was, the atmosphere was utterly incredible and such a massive moment for All Japan and my All Japan fandom. So yeah, that one was a very, very special match for me.
Yeah, I mean, I remember it at the time. It was, it's one of those that I guess that sort of encapsulates this year for All Japan. And I'd be surprised if that's your only All Japan match on this list, Ben. So maybe we can reserve a little bit of the conversation for All Japan for a little bit later on. But I think that match you've picked out there as your number five, it really shows what a good year it's been for All Japan, with that old guard, with Nagata coming in, and people like Yuma Aoyagi being at the top still, like, throughout the year for me.
Yeah, and I mean, it wasn't like a world ender. It hasn't changed the universe, but it was special, I think. It was just, you know, it doesn't need to be an outrageous six-star match. It's just fantastic for what it was, and it was just a really important and special moment for All Japan and for me as well, as a fan.
Definitely. And Kay, what's your number five?
Picking my number five was difficult. Ultimately, I also just kind of went by what I felt like in the moment. I think there are a lot of good matches this year, but well, Ben went with something, god damn it, from the heat of summer, I went with a winter match, and it's a match that I didn't get a chance to talk about on this podcast because I wasn't on that month, but it's the Open the Triangle Gates tournament final three-way elimination match from the October the 6th. Okay, it's not really winter, but it was cold, so it counts.
It's been cold since August, yeah.
And there were so many wrestlers in it that I'm just like reading it out. Dragon Kid, Punch Tominaga, and Yamato versus Benkei Kota Minora at Daruki Doi versus Dragon Daya, Madoka Kikuta, Yuki Yoshioka. And like this match, what I liked about this match and why it's on this list, like over matches that are technically better, is that in this match they took a wrestler that's basically just like seen as a joke in Punch Tominaga, right? Wrestler was almost always on like the lower card that they put in those matches where like all the wrestlers where we don't know what to do with them, we're just gonna throw them into a tag match. That's like Punch Tominaga. Like the main character trait that he was known for was like being lazy, not training, and then never winning anything. And in this match, like they built a Korakuen Hall main event around this guy. Like they put him in a match with like most of their top young stars, and they built the entire match around him, like this middle-aged joke wrestler, and they made such an emotional story out of him like fighting to finally like become for the first time in his life a serious wrestler, like a serious main event wrestler, and like the audience was behind him. The audience, they lost their shit when he he pins like the young ace of the company, Yuki Yoshioka, in this match to win his first championship ever, like the Triangle Gate in this case, and the 2 years championship. It was so beautiful and such a great example of how even if a wrestler isn't as technically impressive as maybe some of his peers, if you have the right emotion, the right story, and the audience going along with what we are with what you're laying down, basically you can make a masterful match with that wrestler.
Fantastic. And yeah, it sounds like one of those. It's such a unique match, even just in its like configuration, and that is one. It's nice to get a match like that on a list, isn't it? Like this, where it's something so unique, and there's not nothing like it for the rest of the year. I can't think of. So very interesting one there, and mine maybe a bit more conventional. It's just a singles match, but you'll get the theme. I like singles matches, and. It's from Noah, actually.
Yes.
The one, also from the height of summer, the One Night Dream in July. And it's not Jake Lee. It's Kento Miyahara against Katsuhiko Nakajima. And I just remember this at the time, and I know they've sort of tangled a little bit since with in All Japan and all that sort of thing, but I just remember the match, and it was just so special, it felt like, to me. And it was really physical and dramatic, and I just remember the strikes and it just being such like a brutal match. And they built it so well. It like it moved nicely, and like a match like this, sometimes it's difficult because your expectations are already up the top, but it somehow went above my expectations, even though they were so sky high. And it was just, I just remember it being lovely, just like a really nice story and an even better like in-ring match. And I'm so glad that they've sort of, they're reconnected for to sort of build towards another match. And they're both fantastic. They're fantastic together. And this match was sort of like the perfect encapsulation of what they can do. And it was a one night dream. I was quite happy with the billing because it definitely fitted with that.
Yeah. Well, you absolutely smashed that one. Fantastic choice, Jamie. My only criticism is you don't have it higher on your list because I do. But yeah, that match for me gets up there on pure spectacle alone. Like at the start of the year, I did not even expect to have Miyahara and Nakajima in the same room. And suddenly not only are we getting them in matches together, they actually have a one-on-one singles match. And like on that alone is a one night dream. It was just, I almost had to pinch myself, check this was actually happening. And then to not only do that, to go out there and put on something so, just smash it that hard. And it's amazing. Like you say, the strikes and Miyahara, just the way he can conduct a match is second to none, really. There's not many, if any, wrestlers in the world who can quite do it like he does. And then you couple that with Nakajima's just viciousness, it creates a match where such a rivalry with such like deep-rooted personal storylines as well. It's not just, you know, some wrestling thing they've cooked up. Like this goes back into real life. And, you know, the way both of those wrestlers work helps to bring that out into the actual match, which, you know, only adds to what was already utterly fantastic.
Is that your number four, Ben, or even higher?
It is higher than that, yeah.
Wow, okay then. Well, I'll hand back to you for your number four then.
Well, now I know you'll probably have some opinions on this, Jamie.
But right, my number Kate, four, what's your number four? I know where this is going.
Look, he had to get on here at least once, all right? I couldn't put this list together and not mention him. But you will be pleased that I have limited myself to what I did consider just doing a whole list of my favourite matches. But no, I'm just going to pick one. I'm going to go for my favourite of his reign. So I've gone for his match against Marufuji at Majestic on January, February, March, April, May.
Have you put the numbers rather than the month? Was that
I put the numbers and I cannot remember which number correlates to which month. So
lovely.
Yeah, I don't entirely know why I enjoy this match so much, but I do. It's, you know me, you know. This may come as a shock. I like a bit of Jake Lee. I like the way his matches go.
Do you? Even though
I know that it's not for everyone. And it's one of those matches where, you know, I get all of my favourite Jake Lee stuff. But also, you get Naromichi Marufuji, who is bloody fantastic. And so he helps to elevate this, not just into a solid, enjoyable Jake Lee match, but quite exciting and quite fun. And yeah, I'm not 100% sure why of all of the matches in this reign this one stands out to me the most, but it does. I mean, he's faced a lot of very good people this year and had some very good matches with them, but yeah, this one for me especially because I'm trying to limit myself to one Jake Lee match, this is the one that stood out to me that I would call my favourite of his matches this year.
Mm-hmm. I thought when you was going for your favourite, I was expecting it to be the Nakajima one. That was the one that stood out for me. but I do remember this Mount Fuji match, and I remember saying it was as good as Jake Lee had got in Noah at that point. I think that was how I like, and it was better than the Kiyomiya match because I remember hating that. but I remember, and I think it's that energy that Mara Fuji brings is like it takes two to tango, doesn't it? So like Jake Lee was very good for his part in this match.
That's the thing about Jake Lee is his best matches are done with his most energetic opponents, and
I think
that might be it. I'm not sure he's had an opponent who kind of has more energy than Mara Fuji brings.
I think that's the sort of thing that Jake Lee, like if he's against someone that's got the energy like Mara Fuji has, where he can sort of spring around the ring and that sort of, then that's where he's perfect. So yeah, I think that's maybe that is the right choice for his your favourite Jake Lee match of the year, if there is, can be such a thing.
I am going to have to take both of your word for it, because while I'm pretty sure I watched that match and I talked about it, I can't remember a single thing about this.
Oh, wow. I thought this about some of the ones, like I have like this big bank of like lists of the matches that I watched, and I was going through them. I was like, I remember liking that one, but I don't know why. Remember liking that one, but that one was fine. And then I was like, oh, I remember these. And I picked the ones I remember. And I think maybe that's like the litmus test, isn't it? Of when you get however many months on, if you still remember why you liked that match, I think that's sort of, that's the tell.
Yeah, perhaps.
Even though I can't entirely remember why I like this match.
Jake Lee was in it. That's why you liked
it. Jake Lee was in it. Exactly. Jake Lee was in it.
It had the words Jake Lee versus in it.
Look, that is the foundational building block of a great match.
I agree. Kay, what's your number four?
My number four, and I talked about this one at length, so I won't say much about it this time, I think is Saki Akai's retirement match. As I said, it's a match that I think encapsulates her as a wrestler and encapsulates what one of the things I like the most about wrestling. And because of that, I enjoyed it very much. And it was very emotional. I kind of had to put it on this list because it was probably one of the matches that made me like the most emotional this year.
Yeah, definitely. And I remember you had some great words for that. I'm pretty sure that was last month's podcast when we talked about that. So if you wanted to hear more of what Kay said about that match and what we all said about that match, then last month's podcast is the place to go, because that was, yeah, it was a great match. And I'm glad that's made someone's list, because it was definitely worthwhile. My fourth is something that this is up your street, Ben. See if you remember this one from the 29th of January. This is a long time ago.
Oh, my goodness.
DDT, Sweet Dreams, Higuchi versus Hino.
Oh, my God. Oh, how did I forget about that?
A love match. I think
you got that one.
No. I think I remember my feedback on it was I enjoyed it whenever Higuchi remembered that he had other moves than the chop.
I enjoyed it because he forgot that he had other moves but the chop. I love this. I remember loving it at the time. And when I was going through my like matches and I got to that one, I was like, oh my God, that was amazing. So I had to be on my list. It was just incredible. They were like two monsters butting heads in the ring, and that, like you say, the chops. I mean, that was the thing from this match, wasn't it? It was like they would just chop after chop after chop, and so much strikes. There was so many strikes, so much doesn't make sense, but so many strikes is what I'm trying to say. And it was Hino's crowning moment. He beat Higuchi for the title, so it had a bit of importance from that angle as well. But that's what I like about DDT matches like that is what I enjoy most about DDT. Like, I love, like, the Ueno matches and obviously the Takeshita matches. That doesn't quite stretch to Tetsuyendo, but that's more of a personal thing. But this hard-hitting style that DDT, I think, probably do best out of any promotion in Japan at the minute, maybe up there with Big Japan, and their that hard-hitting intensity, that the matches that they do that are like this, that's what I enjoy the most. And this was the best example of that from this year. One of the only examples, really, I think, from this year, from a DDT perspective. But yeah, it was just fantastic. I remember talking about it a lot of the time. I could talk about it all day again. It was just amazing. And Ben, I'm sure you've got something to say about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm feeling a bit of a fraudulent big boy enjoyer here. How the hell did I forget that match? I don't know how it was. I'm purely just basing this on how long ago it was, because
it was a long time. I when I went back in January, I was like, oh my god, yeah, that one, I forgot about, because it was so long ago.
I was, because I've been looking at my list as well, and I'm thinking, surely that was a DDT match that I really liked. I don't know how I missed this, but I would potentially, I need to kind of adjust my list, because this has to be at least number two on my list, because that's just. And it's like the perfect meme match. Like, Kay says that it's best when they remembered that there's moves other than the chop, and you say it's best when they forget other moves from the chop. Both moves, both types of moves was just fantastic. And I had that one on just repeat non-stop. I don't know how I've missed, but this is the quintessential me match, my two favorite large men in DDT, just giving us the absolute big boy power smack fest that I can only come up with in my dreams. It's
maybe that's why you didn't put it on your list. Maybe you thought you dreamt it. Maybe that was the problem.
See, thinking about that match now, and when I watched it, it does kind of feel like, you know, that kind of felt like a dream. Was time really real?
Well, I'll give you a few minutes.
It's Royal Rumble as well, so I just stayed up to watch that, and I was was already really,
of course,
quite baffled by what I've seen, and then suddenly they dropped that on me, and it's. Are you sure this match actually happened?
I remember it happening. So, I'll give you a few minutes, Ben, to recalibrate your list if that changes anything.
Well, I'll still go with my list, but just know that actually, in truth, that's number two. That's number two.
It's a joint number two. Okay, we'll be there in a second. I'm going to jump in with an honourable mentions interlude, because this is one that I really, really, really wanted to get on my list and just couldn't, and I was really annoyed. But it's worth just mentioning El Desperado and Francesco Akira. From the Best of Super Juniors Day 8 on May 21st. And it was, I remember just going like mental over it at the time, because Desperado just like murdered Francesco Akira's leg. It was all about this, the work on his leg. And like the babyface fire that Akira showed was like unbelievable. And it was like, I got quite emotional watching it, I remember, and I was like, because I'm pretty sure it was the one that was like TGP was throwing the towel in, didn't throw the towel in sort of thing, with throwing in, not throwing in sort of thing, with Akira, because he was just getting like destroyed, and like he wouldn't tap out, and his leg was getting snapped in half, and it was just like my sort of wrestling. Like I said about the big boys match we was on about then, but it was like, this is the other side of wrestling that I love, is just the technical stuff of like targeting a body part. And I feel like I talk nonstop about a match that targets a body part. So I was gutted I couldn't get it on my list, but I did want to mention it before we head to our number three picks, which Ben, it's back to you then, as we head into our top threes. We're flying through our picks here.
Well, this is where I had the other one night dream, apart from the other one we've just talked about. This is Kenta Miyahara versus Nakajima, the one that actually happened, unlike this
there we go
match that you're claiming happened, but I'm not sure it did. So it was, I mean,
we talked about it a little bit earlier, didn't we? And it's one of those, isn't it? Like, it feels like when you look back and there's so much wrestling that's happened this year, just to say
so
that.
Much.
And so much crazy wrestling like that. If we'd have said to you last December, Ben, if we'd have gone last year's podcast and said Nakajima versus Miyahara will happen and it will be as good as you think it will, you'd be going, no, it's not going to happen because it's just impossible.
I would have laughed you out the room.
I mean, you do that anyway, but...
Bro, but, you know, this time I'd mean it. I'd be like, what are you on about?
I know. Yeah, it's definitely one of them, and it shows that it's on a couple of our lists. I mean, we'll see if we get any further on, if more matches come up as we head then to K's at number three.
My number three, I think, like, for me, my number three and my number two are basically interchangeable. Like, it just came down to which promotion I was watching more regularly at the time. But my number three is Yuki Ueno versus Chris Brooks at DDT Ultimate Party on the 12th of November 2023.
Two matches from the Ultimate Party show, eh?
Yeah. But it was a very long show and it had some great matches on it. But yeah, I think like this match is just like, this match just really shows what you can do with like two wrestlers who don't even hate each other, but like who are great friends, but like absolutely destroying each other exactly because they respect each other so much and won't hold anything back against each other. I think that was a very sweet, very emotional and very like hard-hitting match. Let's just like combine this sort of long friendship and all those feelings into like one slightly sub 30 minute battle. I think it was the length was also nice. Like it was long enough to feel epic, but like it didn't overstay its welcome. I liked the finishing stretch was fantastic, right? Like with Chris thinking he had it won. I mentioned that like when we first discussed the match, and like the little kiss, like you like, I'm sorry, I love you, but no, actually, it's not over yet. And of course, the actual finisher with the WR, like as a nod to the I still don't know how to pronounce the wrestler's name. I'm sorry to have HUB to that match, and yeah, it was a great match. I really appreciated it. I think we talked about it at length on the previous podcast, but it's still really good.
Yeah, no, I remember enjoying it, but I think it's one of those for me where I didn't enjoy it to that level. I know you both enjoyed it more than I did. It was good though. I understand. I mean, at the time we talked about it, and it was definitely a good match, and it had that energy. And like you said, with Ueno, he had that. His finisher he won with was the one that he talked about in your interview with him, didn't it? Just before, and that added like a nice wrinkle to it. Yeah,
I think that also kind of added probably like an additional sort of emotional bond to the match for me. Right, the fact that we did our interview like just before it happened, so seeing sort of the way he built up this match and the things he was going to do in this match in that interview also, I think, was for me personally an additional. Like the bonus.
Yeah, if I conducted that interview, then that would have got on my top five based on that alone.
You'd been first, Ben.
It probably would have.
So then my number three is a theme will begin to become clear as I head to New Japan and to Royal Quest 3 from October 14th for Will Ospreay against Zack Sabre Jr. It was the match for the IWGP US/UK/global/whatever, just anything but Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship. I wanted to get that in just because I was fuming that they've called the new title. The one on January 4th, it's Finlay versus Moxie versus Ospreay for the global championship.
Nice.
That mean it's above the world because global is bigger than the world? I mean, so it's like,
global bigger than the world? I thought they were the same thing.
No, but it sounds more, doesn't it? Globe, it comes with everything else, doesn't it? It's like comes with like it's just it bigger. Is, all right.
I mean, it has so, an extra letter, it is, so
it is so stupid. It is so stupid that they have a world championship and a global championship.
Well, the way I'm thinking of this is they heard my rant about how they were calling Will Ospreay the best wrestler in the world while having a wrestler with the best wrestler in the world belt.
Oh, it's your really, fault, isn't it?
They've noticed their mistake.
Like they have Intercontinental sitting right. The belt's already made. It's sat right there. It's on the shelf. Just pick it up. I mean, come on. But, I mean, brighter news, this match was as good as it sounds. I mean, they've got great chemistry, haven't they, over the amount of good matches they've had over the years. It was fantastic. In front of that British crowd as well, that sort of helps along, I think, with just that the whole feeling behind
absolutely
it.
Absolutely fantastic crowd, if I do say so myself.
Mm. You was a part of it, wasn't you?
Yes, that's why I'm saying so myself.
I think I was occupied at watching League One football that day. I think that was... I wanted to go. It was like 2 months after I was down in London for the All In weekend. So I was like, I'm not bringing myself to go to London again for that. So use the London trip sparingly. But the match itself was really just relentless is the word I described it. And towards the end, there was like a big 10-minute period, the closing stretch, that was just... I had me sat on the edge of my seat, sitting at home watching it. So I'm sure it had the edge of you in the building, you on the edge of your seat in the building, Ben. And it was just really incredible. And I remember watching it a week or so after it happened. So I'd seen all the hype and it was like amazing sort of thing. And sometimes you can watch a match and it never lives up to the hype, but it did with like flying colours this match. It was really, really was fantastic, I thought.
Yeah, the experience of watching just an absolute worldie, one of the best matches of the year, unfolding right in front of you is, I don't want to say second to none, but it's definitely up there. It's one of just the best feelings. And, you know, having only watched it in person, probably from an analytical perspective, I haven't got too much to add, but it was vibes. It was great fun. I mean, when those two in particular kind of wrestle each other, it's always fireworks. They have a good grittiness and a good flavour to their matches that I do really, really enjoy. And it's also very nice being right next to the barricade on the ramp when they walk down to the match as well. I do enjoy that. So
yeah,
that was. It's a fantastic match. Excellent choice, Jamie. I do approve. Well done.
Thank you very much. And, see if I approve of your second pick, because it's not Hino versus Higuchi where it should be. But what is your second pick?
Well, okay. Hino versus Higuchi is my second pick. This is like my 2.5/ honorable mention, however you want to do it, yada, yada, yada. For this one, I've gone kind of similar route here. I've gone for, shockingly, a New Japan match.
Ooh, controversial.
Featuring a certain Mr. William Spray versus Kenneth Omega at Wrestle Kingdom 17.
Ooh.
Which I remember that being announced and being like, what the hell? This is going to be insane. And I expected flips. I expected crazy combinations. I expected, you know, everything you would... you know, expect from a Kenny Omega or Will Ospreay match times 10. And not only did they deliver that, they then just absolutely blew me away with this sudden added viciousness and intensity and emotion and developments. And it wasn't just a match that was athletically impressive, but one that was also mentally incredibly compelling. So that's one of the reasons why that match in particular stands out to me so much, that it's not just Kenny and Will being as amazing as they are when they get in the ring, but you know, taking it to an extra level when, quite frankly, they could have put on a six-star match without any of that other gubbins, but they did then just elevate it even further than they had to.
Yeah. I'm going to reserve comment on that match. and pass quickly over to Kay for their number two pick. So I'm staying quiet on that match for reasons that will become clear.
I wonder what reasons those are.
Very mysterious. But my second favorite match of the year was Madoka Kikuta versus Shun Skywalker at Dead or Alive 2023 on the 5th of May for the Dreamgate Championship, of course. And I think that match, that was like such a good example of what I think makes heel Shun good as a wrestler, right? Because like I think there are some fans, right, in the Dragon Gate community who sort of criticize that he, you know, he doesn't do his flips anymore, and he has a more grounded, more like physically safe for him style. But like what he shows in this match is how he can basically use storytelling to sort of make up for that. And I I don't just mean limb work, although that is also involved. I mean literally like calling back to the story that led up to this match through physicality, through the performance of the match itself. Like the way in which he reconstructed the match, like the previous Dreamgate title match that he had against Kikuta, where Kikuta got horribly injured for half a year. A whole year, not even half a year. The way he like reconstructed that in this match to sort of, you know, mentally destroy him, that was so good. Like the meticulousness of it. It came across really well, and of course, like Kikuta's struggle to sort of finally defeat him, and with it, the demons of his past, so to speak, was really good. Like that was a match where I think the action was very good, but it was also like very, very strongly supported by the previous like year of storytelling leading up to it, basically, and of course the real circumstances surrounding it.
Definitely. I knew you'd get Shun Skywalker in somewhere. I knew it was coming. Yeah, and in the number the second slot there, we'll wait and see if maybe it comes up again in the opening in the top slot. That's my prediction. So, I've spoiled the party here. I've given away my number one and my number two pick. Well, not my number two pick, but I've given it away now. Because I've picked...
It's like giving it away, you mean telling us.
Telling me. Well, you never know. It's Okada against Naito, anyway. From the G1, the G1 final, actually, on the 13th of August. And I didn't know what... Because I went through, like I talked about earlier, my list of the matches I'd... Not rated well throughout the year, and I'd given this 5 stars, so that implies that I had a great time watching, doesn't it?
That does suggest it was good, Jamie. That's normally what 5 stars means.
I felt like it was really bland to pick the G1 final, because of course the G1 final was great, and it was like, because it's the G1 final.
I mean, it wasn't a 6-star match, no, was it?
nothing is. I don't get me started on that, because I've got strong opinions on someone breaking a one to five scale. I remember the G1 being awful. I remember hating the G1 because I decided I was going to watch it all. And my living memory of the G1 is that bloke from TMDK and his top hat he was wearing.
Excuse me, his name is Mikey Nichols.
Well, his name's shit. I don't know if I can swear on this podcast. I came in my, have I got me for that? We'll find out. But this match, I think it sort of saved the G1 in a way, and a couple of the matches towards the end did, because it just felt special and it felt important. And it's Okada versus Naito. I mean, you just know it's going to be amazing. And there's a reason they're at the very top of New Japan, and they've been for so long. And this match, I feel like it sort of showed that reason why. And Okada worked really nicely on Naito's neck. I know I mentioned earlier about Linworth, that was and like targeting a body part in that match. Did that really fantastically, I thought, and it built lovely. I from like quite a slow start, as the Okada matches always do, and G1 finals, they start slow and in the New Japan, the typical New Japan big match way. But by the end, it was unbelievable. Just an absolute crescendo. And the crowd were, I remember the crowd just going insane. It was like an absolute like fever pitch in a way. So it was, yeah, really fantastic. And definitely, I wanted to pick some more exciting picks, but I just had to get it on my list. There's a reason I gave it 5 stars at the time, and there's a reason I still remember it as being one of the very best matches of the year. But speaking of the very best, or however you want to phrase it, your favourite or anything like that, we're on to our number one picks, our best matches of 2023. And Ben, it's time for your top match for this year.
I have gone for Kento Miyahara versus Yuma Aoyagi for the Triple Crown on the 21st of October, because this is just a very, very special match for me. Because when I think of this match, the word that really comes to mind for me is closure. If you've heard me talk about All Japan at pretty much any moment since I got into it a couple years ago, it's been about a year and a half or whatever. So yeah, if you've heard me talk about All Japan at any point over the last couple years, you'll know that the one thing I've really been looking to was what was ultimately this match. Every development come about at the top of the All Japan card that has involved Kento or Yuma, my first thought was, what did it mean for this? How is this going to get us here? And, you know, like when Yuma won the belt, my first thought is, when's he defending against Kento? When Yuma won the Champion Carnival, first thought is, oh, he's going to wrestle Kento for the belt. You know, this is what everything has been building to for me as a wrestling fan over the last couple years. And it happened. I mean, the match itself was brilliant. It's Kento Miyahara, it's Yuma Aoyagi. They never disappoint, really. And, you know, with a match with this much riding on it, you know, it could underwhelm, but it didn't even remotely. It went above and beyond. Was everything you wanted to be for a match of this importance. But for me, it's the extra level to it, is what it represents to me, where this is everything I've been looking to. This has been the big storyline for All Japan over the last couple years or so. And you know, this is, yes, Yuma's won the belt. Yes, he's won the Champion Carnival. He's done all this, that, and the other. This is, beating Kento is his moment. It's the culmination of his journey. But also for me as a wrestling fan, is this is what I've been so invested in. And it's kind of a match that brings me to a point where I'm now like, I'm happy with wrestling. I'm happy to even, you know, take a step back from wrestling for a bit, because, you know, nothing's quite, you know, they built new things after this, but this has been the thing that I've been holding on to for so long that now it's kind of finished, it's happened, but, you know, I'm happy to take a breather from it. It's really just closure for me as a wrestling fan, for Yuma's story, for this journey All Japan has been on. And I hope, you know, obviously we've seen they've kept up brilliance since then, but this has been just all roads for me have led to that point, and it was everything I hoped it would be and more. So yeah, that's why that's got my number one pick. It's hard. I couldn't really choose anything else, even if there were maybe better matches. That was still the match for me this year, and what I'll remember the most.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That a really fitting match for all the reasons you've said there, and that like connection you've got not just to the match but to the story and the wrestlers in it, and that's what it's all about, isn't it? Really, I guess. And
yeah,
that's why you watch wrestling, and it is for like moments like that. You don't get like stuff like that from elsewhere. And you were like, with Kay was talking about the Saki Akai retirement match last month. It's like those sort of moments you just don't get anywhere else, and that's really the beauty of it. And a very worthy number one pick for yourself there, Ben. Yeah, really, really fantastic stuff. And Kay, following that might not be easy, but it's over to you for your number one.
Now, since Ben started with a little bit of a speech, I'll do one too. And I'll start a little bit wider out there. Because, like, I think, as I may have mentioned before, I'm like one of the many, many people who like first heard of wrestling via a retelling of the story of the Golden Lovers, right? And they reunited this year, but the match, like, in, you know, at Blooded Guts, and the reunion was kind of like, a lot of fans were a little bit about it. And for me also personally, like, it felt like the fact that the match was so unemotional and so seemingly like uninterested also from the production side in like telling that reunion story was especially disappointing for me, because I had seen not long before this and like one of my favorite cage matches and like an fantastic example of how you can use a cage match to tell a sort of heightened emotional wrestling story. And that match was the Mask versus Mask steel cage five-way survival match of Dragon Kid versus Shin Skywalker versus Strong Machine J versus Ultimo Dragon versus Diamante. I absolutely adored that match. And it was such a good example of how in Dragon Gate, a cage match isn't a thing that like you do because it's the cage match pay-per-view, we have to put a cage match on, basically. But
you I'm not targeted to any promotions in particular.
not trying to address anyone in particular. But yeah, in Rengate, you put the cage match when the story calls for it, when there's like a strong emotional moment that needs this sort of these heightened stakes of the cage and of that, you know, implied physical danger also and like inclusiveness to sort of really flourish. And I think this match really showed that. Like, as usual with Dragon Gate cage matches, there was like a big stipulation. In this case, right, the losing person, the last person in the cage, would lose their mask. And I really liked like how, even though, like, to begin with, it kind of seemed like some of the wrestlers, like, they really need to be in there, you know, right? Like Ultimo Dragon, for instance, to literally too old to climb down the cage by himself. something that like really pulled through all aspects of that match was a sense of legacy and of selflessness that showed like both through the sort of relationship in this match between Dragon Kid and Ultimo Dragon, with Dragon Kid, you know, almost sacrificing his own opportunity to escape to save Ultimo Dragon, and like thankfully still getting out by himself in the end. And of course, with Strong Machine J trying to protect like his father's legacy as well. I mean, the legacy aspect is also with, you know, Dragon Kid and Ultimo Dragon, because Dragon Kid is Ultimo Dragon's student, right? And but as Strong Machine J trying to protect his legacy, and then of course like Diamante, who himself is also a wrestler who inherited like his mask, like, right? He as a young child, he had to take off his father's mask, and his father was also Diamante, but like sacrificing also his opportunity to escape to save Shun, because they were friends, and like Shun almost sacrificing himself, but thinking better of it at the last moment and like betraying his closest friend, and by then like getting ever more lonely, like starting his a new spiral that then later continued with the recent betrayal, one might say, of Hyo. I think like all of those threads, it's almost like incoherent trying to describe it simply, which is why I wrote one of my longest articles ever about that over on Five Star Network, where you can check it out if you want. But it's such a good match, and the fact that like the cage surrounds them all and like forces all of these dreams, all of these different kind of bonds to clash against each other, the masks like put on top of the cage to sort of like watch over them in this sort of eerie way. It was so good. And the camera work, the way it like supported the stories. This match was what I wanted, what I would have wished for that reunion to have been like. But I'm glad to have had it by itself at least.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And I remember it was one you talked about. Again, we all talked about it at the time, and mm-hmm. It sound. I was good. I never got around to that one. It'll be on my list now after this podcast. I'll go around and go back to it, because it's not like we talked about earlier with your with the three-way match. It's just one of those that's so unique, and it is nice that they can deliver on that that reunion sort of aspect, like you were talking about with how it wasn't delivered by Ibushi and Omega. Though Omega, I will talk about in a moment, don't you worry. But yeah, no, it's fantastic, and again another worthy first pick. And I let the cat out of the bag a little bit earlier on. But my first pick, I'll blame you for that, Ben, but my first pick is all the way back from January 4th, Wrestle Kingdom 17, and the United States Championship with Will Ospreay defending against Kenny Omega, and it was just amazing. I mean, you can throw all the superlatives you want at it. Ben talked really beautifully about it when he picked it earlier on, and it was just like spellbinding. I remember that was the word I used at the time, and it's what I'd written down for it at the time. And it was the perfect example of what the New Japan big match can be, because I feel like it's talked a lot about the big match style that New Japan have. As I wave like figurative speech marks on a podcast, I feel like it's one of those where it's sort of a double-edged sword, the New Japan big match, because every time you see one, it's great because it's a New Japan big match, and it's rubbish because it takes 10 minutes to get going. But this was just like the perfect example of what that is, I thought. And it's obviously a style I really like. I mean, my top three of all big New Japan matches in their own different ways. And I thought this was just intense, and adrenaline was the word I picked out from the notes I made. And it was that really sort of the best way to describe it. It was just like full of adrenaline, and it was just amazing to see them in a ring together again in New Japan. And it seemed like maybe that would never happen with AEW and Omega leaving New Japan. And it's just one of those that even now, in a year, almost a year on, and I remember it, and I'm sure next year it'll pop up on Twitter or something. Kieran will do a this time 2 years ago tweet, and I'll go, oh, I remember that. They have the most amazing chemistry, Omega and Ospreay, and there's a reason for that. I mean, they've proven it over the years, how well they work together, and this match is just sort of like, I feel like, better than the one they did in AEW. And it's probably, I mean, it wouldn't get on the list obviously because it wasn't in Japan, but it was, this was just like streets ahead. Maybe it's just because of the environment, like it's in the Tokyo Dome. It just like, it just doesn't get bigger. It doesn't feel bigger. It isn't bigger. It can't be more important than the January 4th in the Tokyo Dome and Ospreay Omega. And it was really, I thought I had to put it at number one. It just felt like throughout the whole year that it was just destined to be the match of the year for me. And Ospreay's had such a great year, hasn't he? We've talked about him a few times throughout the podcast. And yeah, his best match of the year for me was January 4th against Kenny Omega.
Yeah, when a wrestler's had as insane of a year as Will Ospreay has had, obviously the match that stands out the most is going to have to be phenomenal, incredible, whatever. And yeah, that is, I mean, it also says a lot that, like, I can barely remember any of the matches that happened at the start of the year, and yet this one I can picture relatively vividly in my head still. It leaves an impression on you as well as just being amazing in the moment, which is a big plus.
Yeah, and that's what's so special about it. And I know we mentioned it earlier about like a litmus test of if you remember it, it must have been good. And that's the perfect example of something that's almost exactly 12 months away ago. And I still remember it. I can still picture it and the picture, the scene in my head of what happened. And yeah, really a really special match. And I think all three of the top picks are special for different ways. And Ben, yours was special for sort of like maybe personal reasons of it being sort of like the encapsulation of what you have watched wrestling for. And Kay, yours had that lovely story and the real feeling behind it. And mine had that sort of that like importance in a way of like just how the match felt so important. And I feel like we've done a nice rounded job there, those in those like our top three picks, if we can be so complimentary about ourselves that those top three picks paint a nice picture of the year, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and sorry, go on, Kay.
No, I was just gonna say, I think like I, to a certain extent, like there were several wrestling promotions that kind of in these respective matches sort of could deliver what their fans like truly wanted from them. And I think it's nice to have all quasi sorry, I slipped into German to have all of those. Yeah, all of those different kind of ones that fans have from wrestling represented in the top one picks.
Yeah, definitely. And I did a bit of tallying up as we were going along. We've had we had some crossover, me and Ben. We had two of our matches appeared on both our lists, but in different spots. it should have been three, but alas, we had between the three of us two matches from Noah. Two from All Japan, three from New Japan, three from Dragon Gate, and three from DDT. So we've got the five promotions we talk about the most on the podcast. We've got matches spread around from all of them. So I think it shows a maybe a year that's not been dominated by one company, maybe not been, maybe no one has had an amazing year, but as a company, but everyone's had bright moments. I feel that's maybe a fair reflection of the year in Japan.
Now, I would say that, like, especially like the latter half of the year now for Dragon Gate has been great. Like the last few Korakuen Hall shows were just like bang after bang after bang. I'm really happy with where they are right now.
Yeah,
I think this has been a very consistently good year for All Japan as well. It kind of stayed at a good level. I mean, the Champion Carnival was a bit of a wobble, but even then that ended pretty well. So like if that's your lowest point of the year, that's not too bad, really. You're doing pretty well, especially after having lost a massive star in Jake Lee at the start slash end of last year. It's, yeah, they've really taken a good step forward this year. So as an All Japan fan, I'm very happy with how they've done.
Yeah, I feel like maybe Noah's for me been like the disappointment of my year in like wrestling wise. Of just like I've just not enjoyed it as much as I have in like past years. But I feel the New Japan matches have sort of filled that void in a way of like the I've always watched New Japan, but the every big match, nearly every big match is delivered. Like I'm not like the little house shows in wherever. Doesn't really matter for the overall picture, I guess. And in like, I'm not watching the Road 2 shows anymore. I'm not watching the Undertide the undercard tags unless I'm watching the show live anymore, and that I can sort of jump in, watch three or four matches from a big card and like feel like I've spent 2 or 3 hours well. I feel like that's been like the really has come good out of New Japan this year. And Dragon Gate's had its moments, I think. I feel like towards the start of the year, I was really high on Dragon Gate. Imagine on DDT. Sorry. Maybe I just need to watch Dragon Gate. What am I doing?
I feel like we started this year off saying, Jamie, you need to watch more Dragon Gate. And then we're finishing it saying, Jamie, you need to watch more Dragon Gate.
Maybe that's my New Year's resolution, watch more Dragon Gate.
Wasn't that your New Year's resolution last year, Jamie?
Probably. watch less bad wrestling, and that's not happened this year.
Watch less Mikey Nichols.
Yes, watch less AEW. I just don't have to talk about that. So. DDT, what I was trying to talk about before I got my words muggled up, but I thought they had a really good start to the year, and they maybe tailed off a little bit, but those big matches they've still delivered, and I thought Chris Brooks had quite a noticeable title reign, and it will be something that maybe I'll come back to and think, yeah, that was a good few months, that Chris Brooks title reign. Definitely, but alas, it's another year done. 2023 for Pure Vision is completed. We'll be back, obviously, in the new year, at the end of January. And obviously, there's always so much to talk about in January, isn't there? But before we go, as always, we'll get the plugs in, as it were. And Kay, we'll start with you. Have you got anything to plug for the listeners?
Not yet, but I am currently working on, and maybe it'll be out by the time that this podcast comes out. We'll see. I am working on a guide for the Dragon Gate fan tour, basically like how to decide if you want to go, if it's for you, and what to watch out for, how to prepare if you are going. I think like based on my personal experiences, and then maybe like I'll do that one for Five Star Network probably. And then maybe on my personal blog on ksnkfab.com, I'll write a little bit more like on a personal level about my experiences traveling, and like both with regards to Dragon Gate and the other stuff I experienced in Japan. So if you're interested in that, please keep an eye on those two sites. Though I still have way too much to work through, so I don't know how soon it will come out.
And your Twitter, Kay?
Oh, yeah. My Twitter is at KaysQuest. I will be probably rambling slightly less about Dragon Gate character work for a little while, because I, as mentioned before, still have to sort out my feelings. So it's a good time to follow me.
Fantastic. And for myself, you can follow me at jjohnson_16. I've been busy, really, is probably of the last month or so, with like work and university and all the different bits and pieces I've been doing. But there was an article went out a couple of weeks ago on wrestling. It was the first installment of my Keeping Up with the Indies series. That was an interview with Ace Matthews, an independent wrestler in Britain. And my second installment of that will be coming soon. That might even be out by the time this podcast has hit your feeds. And that's with David Francesco. He's a wrestler in Rev Pro mainly. I had a lovely chat with him, and that will be available on Wrestle In. You can follow Wrestle In wherever you listen to podcasts, for as well as our show, which will continue into the new year, as well as All Elite Listening, Golden Techers, Tokyo Joshi Freedom Fighters, On the Indies, The Ocean Cyclone Show, and Choco Cast. You can follow Patreon as well, patreon.com/wrestlein. There you'll get the Patreon exclusive Into the Wrestleverse every weekend. Kieran, Trent and Libby, they look back at the week that has been in wrestling. Early access as well to all the articles, and Noob Japan TV, all available over there. But the last thing to say before we go, Ben, it is it's a happy moment that we've got to the end of a year, but a really sad moment that this is your last podcast with us on Pure Vision. So I wanted to say thank you to you for being with us since the start in June, July last year. And I really want to say thanks for all the work you've done with us and wish you all the best in your future, which sounds like a job interview thing to say. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah. It has been a pleasure doing this with both of you. You've both been an absolute hoot and yeah, love you guys. You are absolute legends and I do still exist in the world. So you may hear from me occasionally and I may drag you out to a wrestling show at some point, but yeah, it's been grand.
Fantastic. And I'm sure I'll be able to weasel you back onto the podcast sometime. I'll say there's a great Jake Lee match and you'll have to come on. That'll be, yeah. But thank you very much again, Ben. And thanks as well to you, Kay, for all the work you've been doing so far. Myself and Kay will be back in January as we look back on the month that has been. Once we get there, and maybe we'll have a new guest with us. You'll have to wait and see for that. So,
if you do, you need to make sure they watch All Japan. I can't have that slacking in my absence.
We have to make sure they watch All Japan. Oh, I love Jake Lee, and they're the requirement. So if you see an advert on Twitter for a Jake Lee loving All Japan fan, then that's from us. So. Yeah, thank you everyone for listening and happy holidays to everybody.